unhappy. For a few moments I was able to give them some little colour, that sort of little romance. That in itself, I suppose, is a wonderful thing, that one has the opportunity, or has had the opportunity, and the privilege of doing that. But more important still, I like to feel that in some way I was able to reach them, and perhaps, who knows, help them in various ways, not just only momentarily or materially, but perhaps because of their interest in me, they have in some instances, we know, have sought for deeper meanings and deeper purposes behind life. And I know that this is so. My own life was on earth, was perhaps from the earthly point of view rather short, but in that short time perhaps I myself was able to discover certain things which give to me great internal happiness and realization, that in turn perhaps those who have known of these things and my interest in spiritualism, for instance, and psychic things, in turn have also sought for truth and have, through my instigation, indirectly discovered it.
Don't you have your special? It is in a kind of way like a light shining in the darkness of the world. It is a ray which seems to draw and attract innumerable souls towards you. Some who are near the earth, of course, earth ones, often souls who are in need of help, and of course those from other spheres, some of course who are known to you, who come at regular intervals, and then of course the guides, the instrument whose task it is to prepare the way for certain individuals who have something of importance or interest to convey. But it is an extraordinary sight. If it were possible for you to witness the manifestation of power that emanates all around and about you when you sit. Some of them, of course, come to you in your home and are conversant with your thoughts and the work that you're doing, and in consequence, when you come here, endeavor to be present. They may not speak. Perhaps in some instances they have no particular desire to speak themselves, but they come with love, with a desire to assist and to help some particular soul who has been chosen to speak, in a sense, for them all. And of course there are diverse conditions, and these conditions must from time to time affect the results that you receive. But nevertheless, when the channel is clear, when the way is found suitable for a communicator to make himself or herself, as the case may be, self, when they can assert their personality and can make themselves audible and they're able to clarify their thoughts, transmitting so much of themselves to you, then you receive what you must feel obviously is a good contact. But of course there are many people in your world who are inclined to jump to conclusions, who are inclined to be dissatisfied if the channel isn't clear, if the communication isn't perhaps as they would wish, and there are those who dismiss quite casually the efforts that are made by souls with good intent and purpose in their desire and hope to be of service. There are those in your world who have little or nothing to offer themselves, either in the way of mediumship as such, or in knowledge or experience of these things, who, unless it fits in with that preconceived these ideas or notions, are inclined to turn aside and scoff, even when perhaps a great effort has been made by some soul on this side to break down the barrier between our world and yours. We realize that we are often, as it were, knocking our heads against the proverbial brick wall. But what makes it, of course, sometimes very distressing is that when all the work and all the effort that has gone into a particular session or communication, but it is not always received in the spirit in which it is given. We do not suggest, or indeed anticipate, that every individual who listens to the voice of the Spirit shall accept it completely and wholly. In the beginning, they themselves, quite rightly, have their own free individual attitude of mind and approach, and they are free to accept or discard. But there are some, particularly, that we find very distressing, inasmuch that they have knowledge and some experience. And yet, if it does not fall in with that which they hold, their own personal aspect of truth, put it like that, they are only too ready to turn aside.
Oh, you might as well know. My name is Wilde.
Aren't you
Wilde? Oh, I've read your books. Yes.
How fortunate you are.
Yes.
I say how fortunate you are to have read my books.
Yes, I am. Yes, yes. Oh, I must read your books. Yes, I believe. Love your books.
I suppose I should be highly flattered to know that you've read my books, and I've actually got one or two. I would suggest that you bought two, which is very nice to know, but not that I'm getting any of the royalties. No doubt you belong to a very good library.
Well, can you tell us something of your life on the outside?
Well, I must admit it's a relief to be asked to discuss one's life over here in preference to one's life on Earth. Because in any case, my life on Earth is pretty well known among the gossip mongers.
Yes, sir.
I would say to you that my life here is not unlike my life on Earth. You'd probably be very horrified, but it happens to be perfectly true. And I have no regrets about it whatsoever. I'm perfectly happy and perfectly contented, and I live a life of delicious things. But only the world sees sin, because as the world sees sin, it is no longer sin here to be human and to be natural. But on earth, to be natural is to be sinful. But over here, one can be sinful because it is natural. But the world has strange ideas of sin. I live a natural existence here, and I'm perfectly happy.
Oh, goodness me. I'm so happy.
This does happen, but it doesn't necessarily always happen. We have to remember there are many complexities, and that a voice that you hear at a sound such as mine is really an artificially produced voice. By this I mean that the voice is produced by those on the other side whose task it is to create an ectoplasmic voice box. And the individual who's communicating has to concentrate their thoughts and as much of themselves as they can into this. And it depends so much on the individual as to whether they make a good contact and they they reproduce, as it were, an aspect of their physical self, because they no longer have the same earthly physical body. They no longer have the vocal organs necessary for speech. They are not communicating under natural normal conditions. What they are doing is vibrating the atmosphere, our atmosphere, by their thought forces, utilizing an artificially produced, temporarily produced voice box. And that is vibrating, and we are hearing that individual, in a sense, artificially. But that doesn't alter the validity and the reality of the communication, because in some instances, the voices are so clear-cut and so decisive and so full of personality and so full of the characteristic of the individual. And we have had, obviously, people like Dr. Nanji, whose tape I haven't played, whose wife, he tells me over and over again, and he's vouched for this publicly, is identically his wife's voice as he knew her in life. Now, I don't want to go and talk too much anymore. I've said enough for roughly an hour, I guess. Now, if I can answer any questions, I don't profess that I can answer everyone's question honestly. I don't know all the answers. There's still many things I don't understand myself. Now, anyone who wants to ask the first question? Oh, this is unusual. No one. I'll come back to you in a minute. Yes, ma'am?
Is it necessary to sit in exactly the same room each time you have a sermon?
No, I don't think it's necessary to sit in the same room. I think it would be very nice if one could. I do believe that if it is possible for a sincere group of individuals who are gathering together to form as a circle, that if they can sit in the same room on the same evening at the same hour, and that if possible, that room could be used more or less where possible, exclusively for that. This is admirable, of course. It's everyone's desire, I suppose, who has a circle or wants to join on the Sabbath circle. But of course, this isn't always practical, this isn't always possible. I mean, some of the best sittings I've ever had have been in a bathroom. When I've been on holiday, we've had our sittings just the same. When I've been away perhaps for 6 weeks or something, we've stayed in a hotel, and in the hot sunshine of Mallorca, the long evening. For instance, you couldn't get the room dark, so just went and sat in the lavatory. And I sat on the toilet seat, and somebody sat on the edge of the bath, somebody sat on a stool or something, and we still got results. But then, of course, I suppose one could say that I'm an inverted medium. But the point is, seriously, I think it would be a very great asset if you could sit in the same room, of course, but if you can't, I would say carry on. I mean, after all, it's better than not sitting at all.
I don't know very much about this, but...
Neither do I, love so
you've established there is communication with the dead. Well, what do they do besides give you messages?
Oh, well, lovely, you must remember that the minute... You see, this is another aspect. People often say, oh, well, why do they come if they can't come and waste their time coming back here, and it's wrong to call them up and take them away from presumably what is to them a paradise. Well, of course, obviously, the amount of time they spend with us is insignificant. And if I were to go into the detail or spend a lot of time, which one could, on the varying aspects of what they do on the other side, I mean, this would take a whole many evenings, because it would depend so much on the individual. For instance, what one person would find happiness in on the other side, another person may not. And every individual creates, to some extent, his own heaven, and if you like, his own hell. I don't mean by that the old orthodox idea of hell at all. In other words, let's put it in a nutshell, that a person, whether it's in this world or in the next world, is no more than as he thinks. In other words, as you think, so you are. You are no more and you are no less. You create your own heaven. And you've got to remember also that the other side is a state of mind. If you can see it in that way, which is the simplest way I know how to describe it, it is absolutely a state of mind. That's why you do get messages which, to some people outside this movement, when they hear of it, they think it's so damn funny. For instance, somebody will come through and say, oh, when I arrived, I wanted a cup of tea. Now this sounds so stupid. But then again, what you've got to remember is that when a person arrives on the other side, their state of mind is the predominant factor. All right, there are friends, there are relations that are there to greet them, who want to sort of settle them in, as it were, and help them. And often a person has this mundane material something that is clinging to them. And it may be so mundane, but to them it is something that is very vital. And a person on the other side will desire certain something or feel the need for something. I had a sitting today, I shouldn't talk about this, I suppose, well, there's no reason why not. I had a sitting today of a group, and there was a man who came through, and he was, I thought, for a person 10, quite a remarkable communicator. And he started talking about conducting an orchestra. And I thought, I didn't know who he was, it meant nothing to me. But it's quite obvious that this man, in fact, I discovered afterwards, of course, the sister told me, because she said, you didn't know who that was, did you? And she's sort of perking herself up, she's very proud to have known the man, you know. And I said, no, I thought he was quite good. Oh, she said, well, he was, and I won't mention his name, but a very, very famous conductor who died just recently, and she was a very great personal friend. And they had a conversation, and he said, oh, well, I'm still carrying on with my music, and I'm going to get my own orchestra. You see, this is what makes, to me, the reality of this. I mean, it's true, you can get something said from the other side, which, well, you say to yourself, well, that sounds very interesting, but, well, is it, you know? I mean, one doesn't necessarily anticipate that one should accept everything as gospel, but I do, in as much from my own leadership, I can't speak for anybody else's. If somebody comes from the other side, whom I've known for years as a marvelous communicator, provided marvelous evidence, and they say something that seems adulterate to me, I think, well, there must be something in it, otherwise I couldn't say it. In other words, the other world is a world of reality. It's a creative world, and people are not just flying around and clanging hearts and sitting naked on clouds. Some of them look bloody ghastly every day. In other words, it's a real world of real human beings according to their level of consciousness, according to their evolution or lack of it, or so on. It's a world where we shall all obviously find each other in the conditions under which will be present to us, until we begin to desire to evolve away from some particular condition to something better. It's a gradual process of evolution. As I could, it takes too long to go into all the aspects of it. And people always say, well, where is he? The other side. They want some geographical something. Well, I mean, I can't answer that one either. Anyway, who's next? Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll come to you.
Thank you. In Sunday's Express, Mr. Robert Chapman states that darkness is essential for physical mediumship. Is this the case?
Well, I want you to bear in mind that Mr. Chapman, bless his heart, is a remarkably nice person, a very genuine and a very sincere seeker. But he doesn't really, and I'm sure he'd agree with me if I said that he was present, he doesn't really know a great deal about the subject. He is an intelligent person who's seeking the reality or the truth of survival. He is not yet fully convinced. And there are obviously many factors about this subject of which he knows little or nothing. That is no reflection on the gentleman who's been very honest and very fair to me. But, what was the question? No. A great complaint.
Essential for darkness.
Oh, yes, the darkness. Yes, well, for physical phenomena, it is best to have darkness. Well, they tell us that ectoplasm, which is a living substance, which is drawn from a medium, such as myself, is utilized by them to build up what they term a replica of the vocal organs necessary for speech. But when light intrudes or comes into the room, it breaks this up. In other words, they cannot, presumably, what they tell us, keep it in shape. I think this is the only way I can describe it. But it begins to disintegrate. And that is why we have sittings invariably in the dark. But I would also like to point out that I've also received voices unexpectedly, not when I've been sitting for them, when the light's been put on. They have not necessarily been strong, and sometimes we have experimented, and indeed I've had people accommodate people, be quite frank about it. I was much younger, and I was able to do more than I can do now. And I used to accommodate, and we used to have sometimes a red light. I'm on rheostat too at one time, we used to build it up. But the best results I'm talking from my own point of view, my own leadership, I'd say they were dark. All right.
It's also dangerous for life.
Well, yes, it can be dangerous. I mean, this did happen once only in the whole of my career, and that was when I was about 30. And the strange thing was, it was done by a young man who had marvellous evidence, so marvellous that he just couldn't believe it, obviously. And then the next time he came deliberately late. But never mind, he switched on the torch in the darkness and I was ill for a week. But that's old history and it's not important. Now, I must give someone else a chance. Who's next? Yes, you and the white man.
Yes, is there any record of any communication with Florence Nightingale
preparing
a lecture on
the Nightingale? I don't know, is there? Well, you're on the wrong ground with me there, mate, because quite frankly, I don't really know much about it. Funnily enough, I was in Ireland on television, and the man who was connected with that, who wrote the book, you know, badly has it, he was on the panel, and they played some of the extracts. And of course, I had heard some of them. I really honestly can't say. I believe that one should always have an open mind. I see no reason why it should not be possible, and I certainly do remember some many years ago, Sir Oliver Lodge, who made a contact with us, said that they were trying to find a way of making contact where a medium would not be used, and this could well be it. But if you ask me anything about the technicalities and all the rest of it, I really am ignorant. I don't know.
It is not possible that this would be filling the void due to the lack of direct voice meeting?
Well, all I can say is that I certainly hope it is, but I certainly hope it improves. Because, I mean, what I've heard, I mean, is very itty-bitty, and not very clear, and they speak very fast, and it has to be slowed down, I believe. But then again, I have no right to really make much comment, because I really don't know much of anything about it. But I think there's a great field there which could produce something that's really marvellous and exciting in the future. Now, who's next? Yes, young lady, for the green. Will you not put your head up?
I'm not.
Yes, you there. No, we're on dangerous ground, you know. This is the holy of holies here, you know. They develop mediums here, and they have professional mediums. I'm an outsider who comes and gives his services, trying to do his best and saying what he thinks and the way he feels it and the way he knows it, but I'm not infallible. Personally, I've said this, I don't think that the professional medium is necessary. What, love? Can you speak up, lovey? I'm getting deaf as I get older. Well, all I can say is that the uninitiated, as such, shouldn't have anything to do with it, from the point of view, that is, of sitting to develop. Because I think that would be rather stupid. I'm assuming, naturally, that a person who's become sufficiently interested in this subject, that means that they have read a number of books, perhaps they've gone to various meetings, they have got some idea of what it's all about, that it would be quite all right. I see no reason why it should not be, if they are sincere in their approach and their attitude of mind, sitting with people of like mind and like desiring, be perfectly all right. You're just as likely to pick up something unpleasant sitting with a professional medium, and probably more so than you are sitting without one. Because some of the professional mediums I've known have had some very unpleasant people around them. I'm wicked, you know. I did it. Pardon? What, love? Well, believe me, I can assure you that I have experienced things and I have seen things which have horrified me. I mean, if a person is sitting in a circle and they are losing consciousness, it's pretty obvious that something is happening. The best thing that one can do is to leave that person alone. For someone to suddenly take hold of their hands and start yelling in their ear hole, come on, friend, come along, you can come now. Nothing is more definite that's going to upset that person and affect that person, be detrimental to that person, and could do them a great deal of damage. And I don't believe that it's a good thing for a medium to auto-suggest, which a lot of mediums do, into the fertile mind of a developing individual certain ideas. My idea of a medium developing others is for a medium who keeps her mouth shut. And when the developing person in the circle is being used, and perhaps someone has taken them over, and they give certain information or whatever it is, and it confirms what the medium has already seen within herself, or has heard, or whatever, that is good. But for the medium to suggest, "You're going to Joshua's there. I can see a white feather sticking up here." You know, and that you're also suggesting all the time to fertile minds who are anxious to be mediums all sorts of things which may or may not have any factual value. And this is my contention. I think that that people who sit in complete harmony together with no preconceived notions, no one there to auto-suggest things to them, are much more likely to develop genuine mediumship than sitting with people who are already going to start implanting all sorts of things in your noddle. This is my way I feel about it. Now, who's next? Now, I'll come to you, though. Your hand. I'll give you some
views.
Yes, madam.
Could you tell me if you experience any physical depletion on your regular
daily
work?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. I mean, obviously I do. I mean, I feel as I'm getting older, particularly, that after sitting, I'm absolutely washed up, you know. And with the best intention in the world, one wants to help everybody, and that's an impossibility. I mean, I cannot possibly conceivably see anywhere near one-tenth of the people that write to me for sittings, because, I mean, it's physically impossible. A medium can only do a limited amount, and I do far more than I should. And I feel sometimes so exhausted, and if I were not to be careful and sensible, and I hope I shall be eventually, I'm trying to be, and curtail the amount of work I do, I might even lose my mediumship and my health in consequence. This is the problem. There are not enough physical mediums. There are not enough times of the kind of mediums who can provide that kind of evidence. And unfortunately, since I'm the only one, as far as I know anyway, I get all this publicity, which, by the way, I've never sought. It's always been thrust upon me. I've never sought any of this publicity. And in consequence, I get sackfuls of letters, and it just adds to my problems. Apart from my sittings, I've got all these, I wasn't going to use the dreadful word again, letters to answer, you see. And you can't ignore people if they write to you, send a stamped address envelope. Some people have written to me twice and said they didn't hear the first time. I don't know why. But anyway, I do my best. Now, who's next? I don't know. I see a hand sticking up. You, sir.
Yes, your mediumship is direct voice.
Yes.
In addition to,
Well, yes, it's quite separate for a simple reason. Although years ago, mind you, we used to have a trumpet in the circle. I'm talking about when I was in my late 20s, sort of thing, and it used to float about the room and the voice used to speak to the trumpet. But I do not use trumpets, no paraphernalia of any description or whatsoever. The voices are independent. I'm very unusual if I go into a trance, and I often talk during the session and so on to the sitter, and sometimes the voices. No, I'm not a trumpet medium. I wouldn't call myself. Yeah, I didn't start, but the other side started with a trumpet. We had the trumpet in the circle, and they lifted it, and they spoke through it.
Would you say that that's a good idea?
I think so, yes, because after all, what is the trumpet for? It's merely to amplify sounds which are very weak. And in the early initial stages of the development of a voice phenomena, you will have these weak little voices, and therefore the trumpet will magnify or amplify. I think there's a trumpet in a circle. And also, from another point of view, if you're sitting in a dark circle and you've got a trumpet and you have a little luminosity on it, in the dark you can see it. And then if it moves, then at least you have some satisfaction knowing something's happening because something is moving around. And if it, as it will, if it moves eventually, and it touches you and you hear it with the voices. I mean, this is worth doing. This is what I keep saying to people. To my way of thinking, this is one of the most wonderful things in spiritualism. This reality of a direct contact with people on the other side who can speak to us. This is tangible. This is not, "Is that you, dear?" I mean, that's all right. It does a service. But if you hear a voice, if someone comes and speaks to you, it's audible, you can record it. This is the reality of communication. And this, to me, is so important. This is why I like to feel that there are people who are anxious and sincere enough to want to sit and develop. But don't expect wonders, because it won't happen quickly, and it may take years. It took me 7. So who's next? Right at the back. Just breathe through it. No, quite. Well, I'm not going to argue with Mrs. Bridges, but I don't even know the sweet lady. Whether breathing through the trumpet is going to help, I haven't a clue. It might help, I don't know. I can't see if it can make the slightest bit of like a difference, but I'm more concerned about the other people from the other side communicating to the trumpet with someone on this side breathing through it. I mean, it may have some meaning, I don't know. Maybe for Mrs. Bridges, but I can't say so because I don't know. I don't think it makes a size of a difference who breathes through it, as long as somebody speaks through it.
What advice have you got for the setting or the situation, timing situation?
Yeah, but I don't get the suspicious of all breathing.
No, but I mean, they're very they obviously haven't had a trumpet in the circuit of presence.
Are you telling me, sir, that you and the lady, I presume, are sitting in a circle together where you're sitting for the trumpet?
We are sitting for it together. We'll be told this is our next place. We're asking you
to get the trumpet in the centre. We'll have it anywhere. Yes, in the centre. But I thought I explained that to you, sir, about that having the trumpet in the circle and the luminous pane so you can see if it moves around. I'm not being facetious. I hope you don't think I'm treating your inquiry
you
facetiously. Oh, I see. Yeah, but you see, well, you sidetracked me about breathing through the trumpet business, you see. For instance, look, sir. Supposing you put the trumpet on a piece of hardboard in the centre of the room, and you chalk round the trumpet, the base of it, where it stands. Even if you hear nothing during the session, if when you put the light on, you see the trumpet has moved a fraction from that chalk line, at least it's some encouragement to know that somehow, somewhere, somebody has moved it. It may be fractional to begin with, but once it begins to move, and it moves right off the chalk outer line around the trumpet, you'll know then that you're certainly on the way of getting something of a physical nature. That's all I can say. I mean, we won't spend a long time discussing your physical phenomena. Yes, Mr. Bliss, I can see you right up in the corner. And thank you very much for the very nice letter you wrote the Psychic News about me.
Could you tell us what the reactions were of your Irish
audience? Am I what?
Irish.
Oh, mixed bag. I had 2 sticky nuns in the front row. I didn't even know they were nuns until afterwards. We all had a reception with drinks and that they were knocking it back better than anybody else. but no, seriously, jokes apart, a very good reception because there were some very intelligent people among the audience who really asked some intelligent questions, and also one or two, much to my surprise, obviously people who knew a great deal about this subject and even quoted from books of, I think, St. Moses or some well-known personalities of the spiritualistic path. I found that, in a general way, that they were quite open-minded. Of course, there were those sticky ones, too, like the sticky nuns. But they were rather sweet, really. it's one of those. Now, who's next? I can see a hand sticking up behind the man who... Yeah. Yes, dear?
Has the continental, or Asian, spirit found it easy to communicate to you in their own language?
Yes, we have had people, obviously, who have communicated in other languages and have spoken. You asked me a frank and open question, I'll give you a frank and open answer. I think there are difficulties. I think where the thought force is predominantly English, and the medium is English, and the whole atmosphere and condition around that medium is English, I think that there are sometimes difficulties with some communicators speaking in another language. You might ask, well, why should it? But there's no denying that this does sometimes present problems. But it doesn't alter the fact that we have had contact and communication at odd times with people speaking in other languages. And with 50,000 agents coming, there might be more problems. My friend was telling me about the Egyptians that we've got, but nobody can speak to them because nobody knows their language or knows how to pronounce it. Yes, dear? Oh, this is the question that always crops up at my meetings. Somebody sooner or later always asks me about God, you see. I think this is something which can only really be answered in one way. I often said, now let's face it, what is God? Who is God? I mean, God is a word. You can call him Jehovah, you can call him this, you can call him that. And I think that the other side, when they come back, though they may not discuss or talk about God in the sense that perhaps some people might even wish if they're religiously minded, it doesn't alter the fact that they realize there is a supreme power which is beyond their comprehension, just the same as it's beyond ours. And if you're going to refer to them or talk to them about God, they will use the same word, but they'll still be as much in the dark as you are or I am. In other words, what I'm trying to say is, of course, they recognize and they tell us about this tremendous force, this power, this energy, this whatever that is behind all life, which gives them life and us life, and it can be referred to as God, but it's just a word. Every man has his own interpretation, perhaps, according to his religious background or lack of it. It's just a word. And the other side refer to God. Some people do. Some people from the other side refer to God. But it seems to be that no one has seen God. Nobody can really understand what God is. It seems from what they tell us that to them, God is a great power which gives all life, gives life to all humanity. And I don't think that they even, well, I can gather anyway, the people I contact, unless I'm contacting people on a very low vibration, nobody seems to bother too much about this God business. It seems to be something that man has invented and the church has supported and really has no real basis from the point of view of, for instance, the interpretation of the old biblical interpretation of a man on a throne with a big white beard waiting to condemn the wicked and praise the good. This is the old-fashioned nursery or mythological Sunday school aspect, which to the other side, of course, they have to come at least a little step further ahead than us, therefore more intelligent and more evolved. They just don't even begin, I don't think they just think of discussing God. This business of God always crops up. Yes, love, you keep putting your hand up and then putting it back again. Who's that? Oh, you ducky, what do you want? What have we got your hand up for? You want to go out? What do you want, dear?
Well, from what you said,
from
all your presenting it. Oh, I'm what now? From all your input, would you say that when you do more that you are really just playing off?
Well, we are still existing in a different dimension. Yeah, obviously. The world to come is really an extension of this.
When we say where do we go?
Yeah.
We don't go anywhere, we're
from here. Well, in a sense you can say that, but
well, I mean, where do we go?
I know where you're going when you go. No, seriously, I'm not trying. No, the whole point is, what I'm trying to explain to you, probably said it badly, because I'm not, I don't profess to be a speaker. What I'm trying to say is that we are all in our own particular environment. We are conscious of this world because we are in it. We revolve with it. Everything in this room is solid to us because we are vibrating in harmony with it. But when we cease to exist in this body, we are no longer vibrating in harmony with this, we are extended away from it. But we can still, at times, be conscious of it. Of course, we have this in communication. But they are living in an extension of this, on a higher vibration, a different vibration. That's all. I'm going to go away from you. My last question. That's right, love. Have fish and chips when you go home. Oh, what a lovely question. Do you want to buy my book? You can buy my book downstairs.
You can't. You can't.
Yes, I saw one on the counter.
Sorry.
No, I won't.
Just quickly, I mean...
I couldn't tell you.
...instantaneously, or was it a period of change?
No, as a child, this is an old one that all mediums dish up, but it's true in my case. As a child, I was extraordinarily sensitive. I don't want to go into the full detail, but it's interesting in my book, you know. My parents were separated, and I was brought up by my grandmother. My mother ran away with another man. And by the way, do you know I was a bastard? That's true. I'm the only medium that will honestly say he's a bastard. I was called the Salvation Army home before marriage. I'll tell you that. It's in my book. But seriously, as a child, I experienced all sorts of things which I couldn't account for. I just thought every other kid and everybody else saw these things. I just took it for granted until I started to get a cup across the ear hole for telling lies. You see, I came in from school one afternoon, and my grandmother, who was then well over 60 or 70, was sitting in a wicker armchair. And as I opened the front door, the parlour door, I could see my grandmother sitting in a chair, and she was fiddling with some sewing. And I saw a woman standing beside her. And I saw her quite distinctly, so much so I could see the mole, this big mole on her face. And I heard voices, but when I got to the inner door, into the kitchen, the woman disappeared. My grandmother was still sitting there, and I, in my innocence, said, "Oh, what happened to the lady? She's gone." My grandmother said, "What lady? What are you talking about?" And I said, "Oh, the lady that was standing there talking to you. She said, there's been no lady here." I said, "But I saw her." I said, "She's got a mole on her face." My grandmother gave me such a look. She said, "That's Mrs. whatever the name, Pugh, I think the name was. She's been dead for the last 6 weeks or something." This sort of thing. I mean, and I don't think I'm unusual in this. I think a lot of children do see things, do experience things, and certainly animals see things, which human beings grown-ups don't. The more materialistic we become, the more sophisticated we become, the more we get away from nature and the simple things, the more sure we lose these natural talents. And I think these things are really natural to all of us. Oh no, well I had some indication, it's true. I mean, I sat in a circle for a year, roughly, and much to my own amazement, I went, well, after that, we first of all sat at the table and got wrappings and things, and then we dispensed with that, and then I started to go to sleep. As far as I was concerned, I was right out, and afterwards people said, and I thought that I misbehaved myself. I woke up and I thought, "Oh my God, they're singing a hymn and they're closing the door up." And I thought, "God, I've really done something. I've been asleep, but actually I've been in trance." And they were thrilled with my over what had come through. And then the old bug jealousy crept in. The lady who owned the house, and she was a sweet thing, really. She turfed me out because I was such a good boy. But that's not reasonable. And if you can't afford to buy it, get it from the library.